Okay, we are going to move along here on People of Interest. I'm going to go straight to that interview I recorded yesterday with the minister, Kevin Annett, former church minister, who has been working with residential schools and trying to uncover what he calls the ongoing genocide, not just the residential school legacies, but what has been happening to Aboriginal people in Canada since then. And the international tribunal he is helping set up. So this is it. You're listening to People of Interest on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. It's John Wilson here with Kevin Annett. He's an Aboriginal rights activist. And first, Kevin, thanks very much for coming on the program.
Well, thank you. It's always good to be on.
And I wanted to ask you first, you have a book release upcoming. Could you tell the audience, I guess, what this book is about and when they can expect to find it?
Well, you can actually find it now. You can pre-order it on Amazon Books. It's called Unrepentant, Disrobing the Emperor. And it's been published in England. It's really a summary of my last 15 or 20 years working to expose genocide in Canada. And with a lot of updates. For example, it's got material in there about my recent trips to Europe and the activities we're doing in Rome. When we're naming the Pope as being involved in child abuse within the church. So I'm going on a book launch tour. I'm starting in Europe in February and then coming back to North America during March. Hope to be in Winnipeg in the first few days in April and do some book readings around the city. So it'll, I think, come at a really important time when this issue is obviously more than just about Indian residential schools now. It's a whole kind of international phenomena of child abuse within the church and also an international response from survivors of that abuse all over the world.
And like you said, you're involved in this international tribunal. Could you tell people a bit about, you know, where you've been and what has been the response for across the world?
Well, it's an amazing response. There's a tribunal that now exists, the International Tribunal of the Crimes of Church and State. It was set up by seven different groups representing survivors of the Catholic Church in Australia and Ireland, England, the U.S. and Canada, and also groups in Thailand and others who are looking at child trafficking around the world. And what we've done essentially is next September we'll be convening a human rights tribunal in London, England, where we'll be summoning the Pope and the Queen of England and others who are being complicit in these crimes to answer these charges before an international forum. And, you know, wherever I go, like I've been to Europe three times now in the last year, the response there is just unbelievable. We were on, forgive me an example, last September, we were at the protest in London when the Pope Benedict came to visit. And there was over 20,000 people in the streets. And we were on national television and radio. I was interviewed on the BBC because what they find quite amazing, you know, they have this image of Canada being the civilized place. And when they hear just at the level of the number of children who died in the Indian residential schools, you know, 50,000 more children, they just find it, you know, incredible that this could have gone on for so long unreported. And so that's the kind of response we get all over the world, and it's grown by leaps and bounds all the time, really.
Is this tribunal, like, it's not only about, you know, the past atrocities at residential schools, but are you... You're also relating it to current treatment?
Very much. I mean, for one thing, as you know, these crimes are never stop. I mean, they carry on within a community. We heard that when the government's, you know, kind of so-called Truth and Reconciliation Commission came to Winnipeg last June. People that I, when I was there, just talking to them, saying, you know, the impact now is just as bad as it ever was. There's more Native children now in foster homes or incarcerated somewhere than there ever were in the Indian residential schools. And the effects are ongoing. But beyond that as well, the whole phenomenon of child abuse and child trafficking, it's a massive industry, underground industry all over the world. And it's one of the things that I'm working more on. Vancouver being, you know, kind of a hotspot for that whole underground child porn and child trafficking industry. But, you know, to give you an example, I mean, as a matter of fact, about a half hour before you interviewed me, I got a phone call from a man in Winnipeg who said he worked with, he's a company that works with the with survivors of the residential schools, and he said he hasn't been able to sleep for 3 weeks because of the stories they've been telling him about not just children dying in the past, but this stuff's still going on today on reservations all over Canada. So it's really a contemporary story, and that's something that mainstream Canada has to realize. This is not a story in the past that's been resolved because of a few words of apology have been uttered. It really doesn't change the enormity of this crime.
As the Truth and Reconciliation Commission gotten any more critical? Has it had any more guts to tackle the issue? I know before you were saying they didn't want to name names or mm-hmm. or anything like that. Has anything changed since then?
Well, they're not allowed to. You can name names, but it will not be entered into the record. As a matter of fact, Peter Yellowquill told me when he was at the TRC event that he was informed by Murray Sinclair, who's the judge, from Manitoba, who heads the thing. He said that the statements of children dying in residential schools would actually be sealed for 20 years, so you wouldn't actually be able to see the names for that long. But the reality is that they've been forced to acknowledge more and more just because of the pressure of people speaking out. Last September, Murray Sinclair admitted before a Canadian Senate committee, and I think the quote is, thousands of children died in these schools, and their parents were never told how they died or where they're buried. I mean, that's official now. Now the government obviously is going to be forced to do some kind of lip service to the reality that there's hundreds of these graveyards all over the country, and these children have never been given a proper burial, and the people who did it have never been tried. So that's obviously the next step that the country has to grapple with.
So now that there aren't any official residential schools, what would you say are the agencies that continue the legacy of residential schools?
Well, it's the whole Indian Affairs system. When you're living on reserve, you don't have citizenship rights. You're a ward of the state. It's the level of police violence. The RCMP and the police responsible for continual murder of Indian people across the country. It's the social services. It's the foster care system, white foster care system, that continues to deculturalize Native children and destroy families. It's kind of inherent in the whole system of government and police and courts we have in Canada. And, on the prairies, you've got the highest incarceration rate of Aboriginal men in prison of anywhere in the country, about a third. It's an ongoing kind of systemic part of our society that we have to really look at.
Yeah, you mentioned the police, and there was a recent case that got headlines in Winnipeg of an Aboriginal man who said he was just picked up by police and left outside the city mm-hmm. Without a jacket to walk home. Now, this isn't the first time we've heard this allegation.
No, it's continual. Every time I go and speak in a Native community in Canada, I hear those kinds of stories, especially true on the prairies. Vancouver, as a matter of fact, has the highest rate of people dying in police custody of any city in Canada, and about three-quarters of those people who die in custody are Aboriginal. It's the norm when you talk about police, causing these deaths. I mean, it's continual.
And yet, at the same time, they're always promoting how they're advocating more tolerance and special programs within the police to have better relations with Aboriginals. But then one of those cases happens.
Yeah, I'm sure there are people within the police, like in any institution, who are trying to do the right thing. But you have to understand that ultimately the spokespeople are being told by the lawyers, by the PR consultants, exactly what to say to avoid people seeing that this is a systemic problem in Canada. This doesn't arise just because of bad police or bad priests. Mm-hmm. It's a system, a historical legacy of genocide. And, the first step towards resolving that is you got to know the whole story, and that's, a continual job to bring out the evidence about all that stuff.
Speaking of bringing up about the evidence, I know you've been looking into the Robert Picton murder trial, and recently there's been criticism of the Vancouver police on being negligent, that they should have responded quicker to people, to all the missing women, and things like that. But what is your take on this recent revelation?
Well, it was interesting. Last August 20th, the Vancouver Sun reported that the police acknowledged that they knew about the Pictons for over 2 years and never investigated them. And that's after witnesses had told them that they had seen women being tortured and killed on this farm of theirs in Coquitlam. Now, the police have never answered why they didn't investigate. And from a lot of the work that I've done on the ground with people in the downtown east side, it's pretty clear because they were protecting an element in the RCMP that were involved with the Pictons. And some of the women I work with claim they were actually involved in the snuff film industry, where women were being taken out, Aboriginal women taken out and killed on film. Now, you know, we have the eyewitness, as a matter of fact, two women who were there when it happened. And one of whom I had on my radio program, my former show on Co-op Radio, mm-hmm. we were talking about that on the air. Interestingly, the same month that I lost my program, that surfaced in the Vancouver Sun just after, about 10 days after I was taken off the air.
So have you had any official responses to to the allegations made by the people, you know, the witnesses that you've talked to who said that, you know, there's a protected operation. It's not just Willie Picton.
None whatsoever. I haven't ever got a response from the police about those allegations, and none has ever surfaced in the media, as far as I know.
But do you feel that you've been facing some mistreatment because of these allegations you've made?
Well, I mean, I get you know, the usual kinds of threats, and you know, from late night calls and that kind of thing, and those have tended to increase since the summer. When we began to do that, so officially, there's the whole incident that happened at Co-op Radio, where over about a year prior to me losing the show, I was being told by some staff members at the station that it was unwise for me to be airing these stories on the air, that it was not appropriate for me to bring these Native people in when they were, you know, making these claims, and you know, so I think that there had been a certain amount of concern being expressed to me, for sure, by the station staff, and don't forget, about half the revenue comes from the government, and all of our shows are monitored by the CRTC. So, you know, the allegations being made is clearly there's a rogue element within the police, and perhaps even the government, the Attorney General's Department, that are aware of these things and may even be complicit in them. But that is something that can only be proved by when more of the so-called mainstream is willing to look at the fact that this is going on, and when everyone's burying their heads in the sand, it's hard to get to that.
So how have you been continuing to, I mean, you're doing like a broadcast and lecture series, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are there any other ways in which people can get information about this?
Oh, well, I actually have started a blog talk radio program every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific time, so that's 3 p.m. Manitoba time, blogtalkradio.com/hiddenfromhistory. And in fact, it's kind of interesting. We have a lot more listenership now than when I was in Co-op Radio, because being on the Internet, people can call in from all over the world. We have survivors from all over Europe and Australia calling in regularly just to talk about their whole struggle. So there's that. There's, you know, if you go to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org, you can keep up on this campaign. But the important thing, I think, is that because of the international exposure it's getting now, there's a forum for survivors who have the evidence to come forward, and they'll be heard by a much broader audience now. It's not like 10 years ago when, you know, whenever anyone started to talk about these things, they're instantly shut down and there was no forum. Now there's a much bigger forum, and so that's why we say it's a time for people to come forward and start saying what they know.
So when are these tribunals taking place, and you know, is there going to be a report released at some point that people can point to?
There is. The tribunal is scheduled to start on September 12th in London, England, September 12th, 2011, upcoming year. We are organizing in different countries local forums, so that, for example, in Winnipeg, if we have the support, people can have a video link to the tribunal in London, so people can come on and have their testimony taken, and it will be recorded officially in the transcripts of the tribunal. We've had people in the States and Australia and other countries in Ireland willing to do that now. So hopefully in Canada we'll organize that, and residential school survivors and others can talk about their you know, the evidence and the crimes that happened. At the end of the tribunal, and the first session will be in September, it's kind of an indefinite tribunal now, depending on what people are bringing forward. But eventually there will be a report issued. We're going to make a documentary film as well based on the tribunal, and that'll be sent to, you know, governments and human rights agencies all over the world. The European Parliament has already said that they're willing to look at and possibly endorse this tribunal. And I've had politicians in Italy and England say already that they will support us in this work. So it's definitely it is growing beyond what it was a year ago.
Is there anything else you'd like to discuss? Any kind of closing comment you'd like to make?
Well, just that you know, coming from Winnipeg and having done a lot of work there, I know that in many ways the experience people have had historically in Winnipeg is really important to this whole thing, because it's where white and Indian culture first met, you know, and the whole Métis tradition and the strong political and human rights tradition in Winnipeg. I think it's, for that reason, important for people to take up this campaign and to contact us. Hiddenfromhistory.org is the website. Hiddenfromhistory@yahoo.ca is my email, and help us organize this book launch series of meetings we'll be doing in Winnipeg. I hope to arrive on April 2nd and be there for a number of days, so if people would like to help with that, please contact us.
All right, Kevin, thanks so much for doing this interview.
Thank you, Jonathan.